The Nephilim. A mysterious people show up in the Bible and they generate lots of attention. Who are they? Do you want to understand the Bible, but you're confused? You've come to the right place. This is Tough Bible Questions on Timothy Talks, where I'm going to work through answers to your questions about the tough, challenging, and sometimes flat-out weird sections of the Bible. Welcome back, and thanks so much for joining. Last week, I answered the question, are dinosaurs in the Bible? Today, I'm going to answer the tough question, who are the Nephilim? My name is Daniel Pentamone, and I'm the host of today's show, Timothy Talks, Season 4, Tough Bible Questions. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about when I mention the Nephilim, and you're eager for this answer. You're sitting on the edge of your seats, and you're ready to jump up and down in joy when I agree with you, or you're going to pound your fists on the table when I disagree. Others of you don't even know what I'm talking about when I mention the Nephilim. So let me introduce you to one of the great Bible mysteries, the Nephilim. The passage in controversy is mentioned in Genesis chapter 6. And this word Nephilim is also used a time or two elsewhere, but it's unlikely that it refers to the same group of people. So let me lay out the scene for where we meet the Nephilim. We meet the Nephilim in the book of Genesis, the first book of the Bible. And in chapters 1 and 2 of Genesis, we have the creation of the world. This is sort of the Adam and Eve story, the stuff that a lot of us are familiar with. Then we come to Genesis chapter 3. This is Adam and Eve eat the forbidden fruit. There's the fall of man. Sin enters the world. It's very foundational for the rest of the story. Genesis 4 is Cain kills Abel, the first murder in the history of the world. And then Cain starts a family. And he has a lot of kids. And those kids have a lot of kids. And the kids' kids have a lot of kids. And then we come to Genesis chapter 5. In Genesis chapter 5, Adam and Eve have another son. They've already had Cain and Abel. Now they have another son, and his name is Seth. And Seth, just like his brother Cain, has a lot of kids. And his kids have a lot of kids. And his kids' kids have a lot of kids. You get the point. I mean, it goes on and on. And we get all of these different kids that come from Seth. One of these kids, his name is Noah. Obviously, we know about Noah. He builds a big boat. A lot of animals get on the boat. And that's the flood. But then we come to Genesis chapter 6. So with all of that as the background, with the creation, the fall of man, and then Adam and Eve having these two important sons, Cain and Seth, who both have families, we come to Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. I'm going to read these verses for you, and you'll hear the Nephilim mentioned. When man began to multiply on the face of the land, and daughters were born to them, the sons of God saw that the daughters of man were attractive, and they took as their wives any they chose. Then the Lord said, "My spirit shall not abide in man forever, for he is flesh. His days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown." So that's the biblical evidence that we have to work with. Just this one mention here of this group of people called the Nephilim. Right after this, we hear about how God has determined to flood the world to destroy all of this wickedness, and he chooses Noah to build the ark. So basically, this is what we know about the Nephilim. Not a lot. But what do we know about the Nephilim? Well, based on this passage, there's a few things we can take away. First of all, the Nephilim lived before the flood. It also seems that the Nephilim are the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of man. And as we'll see, that's a very controversial thing. Who are the sons of God and the daughters of man? But whoever they are, the Nephilim are their offspring. The Nephilim are also described as the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. So these are famous people and they're powerful people. We don't really know why, but we do know that they're famous and they're powerful. And then last of all, we just have the word itself, Nephilim. Now here's the difficult thing. We don't know what the word Nephilim actually means. That's why it's translated Nephilim rather than an actual translation. They're just taking the Hebrew letters, putting them into English letters, and giving us the word Nephilim. That's what it sounds like. But we don't know what this word means. Now it's possible, it's not certain, but it's possible that this word Nephilim comes from a Hebrew word that means to fall. Okay, this is speculation, but it's possible because Nephilim sounds similar to the Hebrew word that means to fall. And if this is correct, if these words are related, then it might give us a clue about who the Nephilim are. The Nephilim could be the fallen ones, or it could be those who fall. Or maybe it means those who fall on other people in violence. I mean, we don't know, but perhaps the Nephilim are in some way fallers, people who fall, or the fallen ones. Now, at this point, you might be thinking, okay, what's the big deal? Aren't there lots of people, groups mentioned in the world throughout the Bible that we just don't know about, like different civilizations, different groups, and we don't know about them? Why are the Nephilim such a big deal? Well, yes, you're right. There's lots of different groups in the Bible, but this group of people has demonstrated a whole lot of questions. A whole lot of people have put their heads together, a lot of smart people, smarter than me, have put their heads together to try to understand who are the Nephilim. And there's two major views about who the Nephilim are. I'd love to tell them to you, but wait just a second and I'll tell them to you in a moment. Now it's your turn. This season at Timothy Talks, the goal is to answer your tough Bible questions. So, do you have a tough Bible question? If so, email it to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. That's timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com. Plus, every time you send a tough Bible question, you'll get a chance to win a Bible study resource of your choice so that you can understand the Bible even better. We might devote a whole podcast episode to answering your tough Bible question. I'm back. Talking about the Nephilim, there's two groups of people that these Nephilim could be referring to. And here's where the question is. Here's where we start to divulge on opinions. The first group is that the Nephilim are actually a sort of hybrid angelic being. You're like, whoa, that's weird. And you know what I think? Whoa, that's weird too. But here's the idea. The view goes like this, that the Nephilim are created by the sons of God and the daughters of man. Okay, that's what the text says, that they are the offspring of the sons of God and the daughters of man. That the sons of God, then, are fallen angels or demonic creatures who procreate with human beings, the daughters of man. Okay, now you might think that this is a really weird view, and it is pretty different, pretty unlike anything you've ever heard before, but a lot of people have this opinion. And that as a result, these fallen angels coming together with human beings create a sort of human angel demon hybrid sort of creature. These creatures then are so incredibly powerful and strong because of the angelic ancestry that they have that they become the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. And because they come from evil angels, they're also incredibly violent and brutal. And because they come from angels who have fallen, the fallen angels, they are the Nephilim, the fallen ones. So this view actually does justice to a lot of the evidence that we have of the Nephilim. It has an adequate explanation for why they're called Nephilim. It has an adequate explanation for why they are the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown, for why they're so powerful, so strong. And there's even some biblical evidence that might indicate that this is the correct view. First of all, you have the book of Job. And in the book of Job, Job chapter 1, verse 6, and Job chapter 2, verse 1, you have this phrase, the sons of God. And here's the remarkable thing. The sons of God in the book of Job refers to angelic beings who stand in the court of God. Okay, so you get this here? We're going to the book of Job, and we're seeing that sons of God is angelic beings. And then we're saying that we could put that into the book of Genesis and see that the sons of God is angelic beings who come into the daughters of man and they bore children to them. Then you have two other passages that tend to lend some credence to this view. 2 Peter 2, verse 4, and the book of Jude, verses 6 and 7. Both of these passages refer to angels who fell and were imprisoned by God as punishment. Okay, now these are difficult passages, 2 Peter chapter 2 and Jude verses 6 and 7. Difficult passages because it's not really clear who Peter and Jude are referring to. What creatures are they referring to? Who are these angels who fell and were imprisoned by God as punishment? It's not really clear, but one of the interesting things about these passages is that in both of those books, this description of these angels who fell is given in the same context as the other events in the book of Genesis. So around the time of Noah and Noah's flood and destruction on Sodom and Gomorrah. So it's pretty interesting here when you look at that to see that the same events that are happening around the Nephilim are happening around these fallen angels. Peter and Jude are recounting the stories of the flood with Noah and Sodom and Gomorrah. And they're also mentioning these fallen angels. So could this be the Nephilim? That's one of the views. Now, before we discuss the pros and cons of that view, I want to give you the other view as to who the Nephilim actually are. The other view is that the Nephilim are the descendants of Seth and the descendants of Cain. And here's how the view goes. Remember how I said that prior to the chapter, Genesis 6, Adam and Eve have two very important sons. They have Cain, who killed Abel, and they have Seth. So Cain starts a family. And Cain's family is a very affluent family. They are a family that invents, or practically invents, things like music and better agricultural techniques and all sorts of different achievements in the secular realm. This is Cain's family, a very affluent, secular, worldly family. That's what you get. That's the picture that you pick up as you read about Cain's family in the book of Genesis. But Cain seems to be a group of people. Cain and his family is a group of people that's been rejected by God. And they go away from the area where the rest of the people are, and they're living separate from God, and they're not interested in God, but they're very affluent. Then you have Seth. Seth is also the descendants of Adam and Eve, and you don't get that picture that Seth is nearly as affluent, but you also don't get the picture that Seth has been forsaken by God. You get the picture that Seth's descendants may be those who are following God. So imagine this. Imagine a world in which there are two dominant families in the world. One of these families is marked by success and atheism. The other family is marked by humility and godliness. And these two families don't intermingle. They stay separate. They're separate cultures, separate peoples. They do their separate things. But at some point, these two cultures begin to grow closer to each other. And the men in Seth's culture, in the godly culture, begin to become attracted to the women in Cain's culture. And so what happens is that these two cultures that had previously been separate groups actually start to come together and to form a new culture, sort of bringing these two separate cultures together. And when this happens, you have all of the secular success of the descendants of Cain, and you have all of the valor and the good values that come from the descendants of Seth, but they're joined together. You can imagine that people who come from this mixed background could be very successful people in the world because they have the values to get them to places that they want to go, and they have the culture and the learning that they also need. And so they become the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. But here's the crucial thing. As these two cultures come together, something important is lost. These new descendants, this new group of people in the world, has lost the connection with God that Seth's family had. And so they are fallen. They are the fallen ones, the Nephilim. Well, in this view, the Nephilim are a group of people who are depraved and evil and violent, and they do terrible things in the world, but they're still fully human. What's the evidence for this view? Well, this division between two groups of people, it does seem to be pretty clear in the first chapters of Genesis. You read Genesis and you have two genealogies, the genealogy of Cain and the genealogy of Seth. So it does seem like the book of Genesis is setting us up for two groups of people, for two cultures in the world. Another thing is that immediately after we hear about the Nephilim, we hear that God will destroy the world. And so this makes us ask the question, could it be that this judgment comes on the world at this specific time because the godly culture of Seth's descendants has now been corrupted? It certainly begs the question. It makes you wonder, could that be why the flood comes right after this point? Another piece of evidence is that the sons of God it's used in the book of Job to refer to angelic beings. But there's also lots of other times in the Bible when sons of God is also used, and it just refers to godly people. People who have a relationship with God. So if you use that, then could it be that sons of God is just godly people, like descendants of Seth? And then we come to Jude and 2 Peter. Again, these are the difficult passages. And I think that if you hold to this view, that these are the descendants of Seth, you can look at Jude and 2 Peter and you can say it's not really clear what these books are describing. It's possible that they could be describing this fallen angel theory, but it isn't certain. It's not clear. It's possible that we just don't know what they're describing. And so that's how you would deal with those passages in Jude and 2 Peter. They're not so clear that you can say with certainty, well, this must be referring to the Nephilim passage. So, coming now down to the answer, because that's what you want, right? You want me to tell you the answer, right? Well, anyways, we've worked through all the evidence. So at this point, I'm going to say what I think is probably the best solution. Again, there's been a lot of debate. I've tried to summarize the answers for you. And with so much debate and so many people who come down on different sides, I don't want to lock down on an answer and say that anyone who disagrees with me is certainly wrong and I'm convinced that I'm right on this. But personally for me, I come down on the side of the descendants of Seth view. In other words, I think that the Nephilim are the result of a union between the descendants of Seth and the descendants of Cain, these two cultures that finally come together and produce offspring who are known for their violence and evil in the world. And God responds to them with a flood. Now, there's a few reasons why I come down on this side. First of all, I think it fits the flow of Genesis really, really well. The fact that Genesis has already set us up with these two families, it makes perfect sense if we already know about these two families, for them to now come together and that to be the beginning of the end for the world, ultimately climaxing in the flood. I think it does a really good job of showing us where Genesis is going as a book. Second, it doesn't require the supernatural. And I don't think that we should assume that the Bible is talking about something supernatural if there's not decent evidence to assume it. Certainly, there's lots of miraculous supernatural things that happen in the Bible, but we've got enough of those. We don't have to be looking for more if we don't need them. So here you've got a perfectly legitimate, non-supernatural answer to say these two cultures come together. And I think that's a much better answer than to see this supernatural sort of hybrid angel, hybrid human creature that comes about. Which, as another point, I'd just say, like, that sort of defies imagination to imagine that there could be these supernatural creatures that come together with humans and create a sort of separate breed of individuals. But my third main reason why I don't see the fallen angel view is because it indicates that demons or fallen angels or angelic beings of some sort somehow have the ability to procreate with humans. That seems to me to be a very unlikely possibility, especially in light of what Jesus says in the book of Matthew. The Bible seems to actually deny that angelic beings or supernatural creatures have this ability. Jesus says in Matthew 22, verse 30, "For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels in heaven." Now, you look at that passage, it's not a one-size-fits-all answer. It's not saying that it's absolutely, completely impossible for something like this Nephilim theory to have happened, the fallen angel theory, but it does seem to indicate that that's not really likely. When I read that, it makes me think, humans have an ability to have children, and I don't see that angels have that ability, and I don't see that even fallen angels would. So that's where I come down on. I've tried to give you a balanced view, show you both sides. You can make your own decision, but where I come down on the Seth and Cain families intermingling. I hope you enjoy that. You're welcome to come to another view. Like I said, in my mind, this is the best solution. But why does this matter? We've been working on this tough Bible question of who are the Nephilim. Why does it even matter? Well, assuming that this is the correct view, the Seth and the Cain families coming together. It explains why the flood came about. It paints a picture of the world and what happens when God's people are enticed by godless culture and leave him behind. When this godly society is enticed by the secular society and they leave God behind to pursue secular things, to pursue the world and everything wonderful and attractive and beautiful that's in the world. And it shows that God punishes sin because their descendants become so depraved, so evil, that that becomes the final straw in which God determines to punish sin and to call Noah to build the ark. So it is useful, I think, to understand this because we'll understand the book of Genesis better and we'll understand that the God that we serve punishes sin and that this was a very significant event in the history of the world. Well, thank you so much for joining Timothy Talks as I'm answering these tough Bible questions. I want to invite you to join me next week. Next week, I intend, Lord willing, to answer the question, does God command genocide? And obviously, this is a huge question. A lot of people have wondered about this, and you may have even met this objection yourself as you're sharing your faith with others. If you've not already, let me invite you to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed today's show, it would mean so much to me, it really would, if you would share this episode with your family and friends. I think that they would also enjoy it as well. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.